Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Happy to have you with us. But first, I want to tell you about one of the sponsors we have here on the show. The NFL draft is one of the most anticipated days of any football fan's calendar, and that also means fantasy football season is not too far behind. DynastySportsEmpire.com is going to change the way you play fantasy football. DSE offers fantasy football gamers of all skill levels an opportunity to draft and retain your well-maintained rosters and players for their entire NFL career. Highlighted with large rosters, high-scoring games, easy payouts, and an amazing online community, DSE has everything you would want in a challenging online experience. Please visit them online today at DynastySportsEmpire.com. That's DynastySportsEmpire.com. And check out all the amazing upcoming formats for this upcoming fantasy football season. Go check them out. We got a great episode for you today, so let's get to it.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. Welcome on back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Hello, Verbalians. Hello, Shenanigang. Hello, Fantwans. And hello, God. How are you doing today?
Yeah, we're doing well. I mean, you don't have to emphasize it that much. That makes it sound like you got an ego, you know?
You don't have any ego, is what you're saying. You just call yourself a God.
And there's God, Mike. Like, you just say simply words like, oh, okay, maybe it's got some God things where you're not like, oh,
wait.
A God.
So you don't envision yourself having any ego when last week we spent about 40 minutes talking about why you thought yourself as a God.
No, I feel like I have the capabilities of becoming one, but I don't feel the need to be vain when I progress to this status.
So you're like a god in training at the moment, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the GIT, baby.
Well, I feel like the episodes are progressing, and each week your ego is just, you know, boosting. Are you near full god status yet, or are we still going with, almost there?
Well, let me look at the battery life. I'm about a good 47% right now, so we're hitting midway.
Okay.
You know, when we get to maybe episode 1,000, then you'll get full God mode.
So I have like 400 and no, I have 600 something episodes till you claim that you're a full, flat out God to people.
Yeah, I haven't done the math. I don't know what year we'd be in that time, but I'll leave it to you to remind me to get to that mode. Okay. Like every 100 so episodes, just be like, Berlu, are you at like 60% now?
Yeah.
If not, you're off pace.
Well, it's interesting because we picked up a lot of, you know, what seems to be a lot of new listeners over the last couple weeks, especially after our interview with Jonathan Antoine, who had some...
Hi, everybody, by the way.
Yeah. Had a rabid fan base. And, you know, last week, one of our fans emails, hello, Scott and Pilgrim Mike, and says a bunch of stuff. This week, hello, Scott and God, Mike. Anything for the audience this week, Mike, that shall come out next week?
The one God thing I did, I killed a very large hornet's nest on my own while getting stung.
Wow. So did you use powers or did you just use bug spray?
Hose and spray. Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, if you were a true God, I feel like you could do that with your mind, or you could just like enchant the bees to go away.
Everybody knows wasps and hornets are atheists, so they wouldn't believe in my God powers, and it wouldn't work. So
I didn't know that. I didn't know that common knowledge that I guess so many know.
I told you to watch Nat Geo, but you never do. This stuff is go over it all the time.
Well, anyway, welcome to our our stupidity here. As we, I guess, climb towards 400 episodes, I guess would be the next mark. I guess I don't know what do we call those
achievement threshold?
Next threshold? Yeah. Next stepping stone, if you will. So last week we're coming off of Charlie Hune of Foghat. Got a lot of people going, oh crap, wow, like you know, I've been listening to them for years and all that. So it's pretty cool to talk to Charlie. So if you are a classic rock fan, go check out last week's episode with Charlie. And this week we'll be staying in the music world, but kind of a more, contemporary artist, if you will. Anyways, I am coming off. You do a lot of the cooking in your house, correct?
Yeah. If there's anything cooked, it's me.
Okay. As do I. I do a lot. I would say if there was a split, it'd probably be 70-30 Scott cooks. Now, I don't know if you've ever had cooking by your loved one, your wife, that was horrendous, and you didn't know. I was curious how you played this. Like, has your wife ever made you something that was not good?
Well, Izzy doesn't cook a lot. When she started getting the health kick, she did do like some recipes, and I always encouraged her to kind of do it because I emphasize, you know, not everything I ever cooked to you was like amazing. So right. It's like if it's burnt or it doesn't taste good, you lap it off. Maybe you go, okay, I'll adjust it this way. Maybe I go, okay, we throw away that recipe card, but you don't get upset. But she's a little sensitive on that. And I do recall like what had her stop was it was some kind of like health French toast.
Okay.
Which involves like Ezekiel bread and using egg whites to beat in. The one thing she didn't get like with French toast is when they say, you know, dip the bread in, it's just like, you know, put it on top of the liquid, 2 seconds, flip it over, right. 2 seconds, do
did
that.
She, did she do a she full on soak?
Like, it was like full on soak where like when it was done, it was still wet. Right. And I'm like, honey, I'm pretty sure if we eat this, we might get salmonella. Where she was, she kind of gave up after that. But I keep on trying to promote her. I'm like, have fun with it. And all. If it comes out bad, you just have a good chuckle and order a pizza.
Yeah. So like, I had worked on the house all day and cooked the last few nights. So I said, oh, I took out some chicken to defrost if you can cook something up. And usually I'm more of the experimental. Like I'll, you know, I mess around with different spices and things. She'll do like the standard salt, pepper, olive oil kind of chicken, which is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm going to bake the chicken today. I'm like, okay, cool. And like I'm playing with the baby and I walk in and she's slathering the chicken in spinach and I think it was spinach and artichoke dip, like just the top of it. I'm like, okay. I'm like, did you season the chicken at all? Because I could tell like the chicken looked really plain underneath it. And she's like, oh, no, but I figured it'd be. I'm like, okay. And man. came out and I could still tell that the chicken underneath wasn't like seasoned at all, and it basically just was like it kind of tasted like boiled chicken, like real plain chicken. But then you were like dipping the chicken into spinach and artichoke, which is kind of a pretty strong taste, you know what I mean? Like if there was a flavor there and you blended or lightened it up and mixed it into some kind of spread. But man, I just had to be dead honest. I was like, this is pretty bad. And she, you know, we're sitting there trying to be like, oh, it's all right. And even she's like, yeah, it's okay. It's not bad. I kind of like it. And then like right before I came down the podcast, she's sitting there with a piece and she goes, I can't eat this. And she walks up and just dumps it out. I'm like, yeah, that was a failed experiment.
Now, did she like make the dip and it was just putting plain chicken, or was it like the dip got in with the oven and was
dip went right in with the oven. It was like a, you know, pre-made dip that you would dip chips in, you know, so, and it was just like slathered on top of the chicken. Did not work.
Yeah. Heated, sour cream doesn't really do it for me.
It wasn't good, man. It wasn't good. But if you want to come over for some spinach and artichoke dip chicken.
Throw away that garbage bag, dude. You keep that right in there. In fact, heat up the garbage bag in the oven. So when I get in there, I'm pulling it out fresh and just like shoving it in my mouth. I'm like, your garbage is my treasure, baby. Woo!
Well, you know.
Got me some free chicken.
If you guys come up to Jersey anytime, you stay over. We'll have Izzy make the salmonella French toast in the morning.
Of course. That's how you start the morning. Yes.
And then right around afternoon time, we'll have some dip chicken. And, things will be good, man. Things will be, maybe we'll wash it down with some Budweiser Clamato like we had once on the cast here.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've made some things I don't like, but usually they're like passable. You know, like they're usually I can get through the meal. I feel like when she takes a risk, it's a I always want to be like, you stick to those couple things that you make because they're good, and I'll handle the experimentation in this relationship.
Now, how expensive does it have to be where if it's like average, you're like, I can't throw this out. I gotta like go on through this, or are you just like, if it's bad, it's gone?
I generally power through whatever, because I'm a big eater. Like I try not to eat too much in the morning. Every once in a while I'll have a decent lunch, but if it's dinner, I'm gonna eat basically everything that's there. And then I always say, oh, I'll put the leftovers in the fridge and have them tomorrow. Very often 45 minutes after dinner, I'm going in and taking care of the rest. I worry about when my son is like able to eat food, because between the two of us, we eat everything. Like there's nothing left usually.
So you just imagining like daily trips to the supermarket just for Scotty and Shay.
Yeah. Because my wife can eat too. Like she could pack away food too. So it's like, We almost do like a communist Russia kind of thing, where like if I cook 5 pieces of chicken, I will take 2, she'll take 2, and then I will cut the fifth one in half beforehand and be like, well, that one's there. And then if she doesn't take it, I'm like, yes. but very
That's
often-
a weird analogy of communism, Scott. Like, of all my history classes, nobody brought up chicken dividing. I got to be honest.
Well, you know,
was that like Stalin?
No, this is like modern day communism. You know, like the far left, they split chicken like this.
Oh, okay. So we're talking about Putin times, and I was hoping you had like a Gorbachev story, like where Ronald Reagan is like, "Mr. Gorbachev, give me another piece of chicken."
But
oh yeah, and don't forget that wall thing.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I think you're dead on though with. The way to present it is definitely just kind of eat it and laugh about it at the same time. Like, there's nothing worse than, like, I remember we went to, like, somebody had us over for dinner maybe 2 months ago, and whatever they cooked was horrendous. I forget what it was. It was some kind of, like, chicken parm, but, like, I don't know, like, the breading on the chicken was completely falling off, and then, like, the marinara sauce was cold, and the cheese wasn't completely melted on top, so it was just kind of like, it reminded me of, like, high school lunch, like, nothing's ever quite cooked all the way, you know, it's just kind of heated up in that styrofoam container, and that's kind of it.
Okay, so you establish you're a good 2.5-piece chicken guy, possibly 3.
Oh, I'll eat a lot. Yeah.
Okay. So you're over that house. How much do you do to be nice to the person? Was it just like one slice and, oh man, I'm so full? Or were you just like hammering down? It's like, I gotta get my 2.5 in.
You know, we're big guys, Mike. I think you gotta have 2. You can't sit there and have 1 piece and be like, oh, I'm full, because no one's gonna believe you. There's a certain amount to the act, you know, like that you like it. I think if you have 2 and then maybe fill up on like whatever the side dish is, you're okay. But if I'm sitting there just slowly, and the other problem is everybody, like all my friends know I'm an extremely fast eater, and like almost to a point where I'm like self-conscious about it. Like I'll be looking around the table like, oh my God, I have 1 bite of my burger left, and like people are just like cutting up their food. I'm like, oh boy, I gotta slow down here. So people know that. So if I'm sitting there nursing 1 piece of chicken, I feel like I'm going to get called out. And then that's the worst. The worst. What? You don't like it? Oh, no. What am I going to say? My stomach's bothering me, you know? Then why'd you have 11 beers before dinner, you know?
You're trying to, like, push out farts at me. No, I'm really sick. come on. But I, too, have that thing where I eat, like, lightning fast. That kind of reminds me of a time I went to a movie with a date one time, and it was one of those... you know, dinner, movie things and all, the AMC where they serve you food.
Yep.
And, like, I remember I was, like, hungry that day. So both our food came out, and, like, I think it was, like, just as it was done with starting attractions, like, she turned over and she's like, oh, can I have a piece? And I'm like, well, it's my last piece. She's like, how are you done already?
Yeah. I very often look around and I'm like, oh my god, everybody's like picking out their food and they got 3/4 of a plate left, and I am like done, like kind of like moving my fork around like the sauce that's left on the plate. Sometimes I eat so quick I start sweating. It's something, I don't know. I think maybe when you grow up with like a brother and a sister, and you know, you're not financially like wealthy where you have tons of food I think it's like a survival mode. The quicker I eat, the more I can get on my plate.
Yeah. And then you got to cover it up. You're just like putting your napkin in certain positions. Like maybe if I put the salt shaker on, it'll look like I still have food on the plate.
If it's like a restaurant that serves bread, I'm starting to look around. Like, can I, you know, put a couple pieces of bread or some chips on the plate?
Like, how fast can I say when they ask who wants seconds? Is it rude to immediately just scream, yes? Or like, do I have to have a 5-second pause and then go, you know what? I will have another burger.
Yeah, I think sometimes you gotta you gotta feel the room out a little bit. You can't be like, you know, if the vibe at the table is everyone's so full, like, oh, what a dinner, and someone's just like, anybody want any more? But they're kind of hinting at like it's time to clean up and wrap it, and you're like, yes, please, you know, like, and then that people watch you sit there and eat a whole burger. I think you almost have to sacrifice your hunger there and just eat something when you get home.
I think you just say, yes, I do. I don't care that souffle takes 8 hours to make. Right. I want a second one. Mm. Get in there.
So, yeah, most of the time I'm going for second. But, yeah, so what I was originally saying, we were at this dinner and it was terrible. And it was just kind of like, it stinks to not be able to say something and just kind of, you ever give your wife like the look across the table and be like, you got to subtly be like, bleh, you know, like, and you just got to power through it. But yeah, not a big fan of tonight's dinner, if you will. So tonight's dinner, real dinner, is this hazy IPA that I'm that I'm drinking to get the spinach and artichoke chicken out of my craw. If you
maybe will. You should put some of the spinach artichoke in the can.
Just keep going,
and then maybe it doesn't work with chicken, but it's amazing with beer.
Maybe tonight before bed, I'll just, instead of, you know, spraying the toothpaste on the brush, I'll just slap a little spinach artichoke dip on the brush. And
They both have a white base, so it'll work.
Dude, I just got like a little nauseous thinking about brushing my teeth with spinach and artichoke dip. Like,
all right, no self shenanigans showdown.
My stomach just hurt, like went like like a little no. Don't worry, you're not doing that.
It's very like, stop joking about that. No.
Did I ever tell you the story of why I hate broccoli?
No, do tell.
So I was a normal kid who didn't really like his vegetables, you know. My mom was always very big on finish your plate before you leave the table. Old school mom kind of thing, you know. You can leave the table to go do whatever you want. Because when you're like, I'm going to say I was 11, 12 years old. That would be my guess. In that age, dinner's not like, you don't want to sit down with your family and eat. You want to eat and like get back to playing a video game or running around outside or playing with your G.I. Joes or whatever it is. So I finish my plate. I'm like, I'm done. And I leave all the broccoli on the table, on my plate. And she's like, no, you're not leaving the table till you finish eating the broccoli. And now I hated broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I hate it. And so I put up like a 30-minute stalemate with my mom. And my mom, she's not giving in. She's like, you're going to finish the broth. So I try all the kid techniques possible. I shove it in my mouth. I hold my nose to try to swallow it. Okay. Still got a ton of broccoli. So what I go for is the put it in your mouth and wash it down with milk. Like the just get it in there and chug it down like a, you know, like a Johnny Knox, no, Steve-O and the goldfish, you know, just okay. kind of just.
Yeah, broccoli and milk seem to be a good mixture.
Yeah, yeah. So I blast it down and right away doesn't work, and I spit up a whole bunch of broccoli onto my plate. I'm like, oh, all right, well, that was traumatic. I guess I'm done. And my mom goes, no, you're not done. And there I had to eat the broccoli that was now filled with regurgitated milk. So there I am shoving in recycled broccoli into my mouth. And to this day, I just stay away from broccoli.
Man, that's vicious, man. Like literally the vomit you had to eat.
Pretty much, man. The milk-broccoli mixture was still in play in her mind.
And I mean,
it's very out of character for my mom, too. My mom's pretty much just like, even now, if I had to think about my 11, 12-year-old self, I was probably driving her crazy before this, like, for some other reason. You know what I mean? Like, I was probably being like a dick at the table or like a grump or fighting with her or something like that. And this was probably like her revenge piece. But to this day, it's still like at family parties, you know, like something that comes up like, oh, you want some broccoli? I'm like, oh, God, you know, like she's like, I got some milk for you. I'm like, oh, but yeah, this was this was a mom slip up. I think you have to wave the white flag when your son pukes up some milk and broccoli.
I'm starting to ask myself how much nutrients are left in that broccoli after it's spewed out of your body. I got to think the throat acids would have taking care of any vitamins that were in there, where it's just a moot point to put it back in your body.
Maybe this was my mom's way of, she didn't get enough chicken. And she's like, you got to start filling up on the other stuff because we can't afford your eating your eating habit. I got a half a piece, you had eight, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
like mom's got to start buying like Rice-A-Roni or something like that. Something that can go down and fill that tummy where it's like there's not enough space for more chicken.
Dude, I was notorious for just feasting on like, I think I told you this before, but like meat in the refrigerator, like cold leftover meat. And I know I told the story before, but it still amuses me. I was playing in a basketball league in Newark, an adult league, and one day we're just getting all pumped for the game. Me and this guy are driving into Newark, and we're like, oh man, like we're gonna win today, blah blah blah. I'm gonna go home he's like, what's the first thing you're gonna do when you're celebrating? I was like I'm gonna get in that fridge, I'm gonna look for some cold meat and eat it. He's like, oh my God, I love cold meat. And he's like, I go in the fridge and I take out cold. So that whole basketball game, anytime one of us would score a point or a layup or a block, we'd be like, the other guy would be on the bench like, cold meat, baby! You know, like, I remember him hitting one from three. I'm like, cold meat! And, like, him just, like, laughing the whole way down the court. People must have thought we were, like, insane because we were, like, it was becoming, like, our war chant.
Yeah, I would like to see the ESPN 30 for 30 special on cold meat. Yeah. That, I would, it's like, you know, sometimes I run out of ideas, but that one I'd be coming like, yeah, I'll spend half an hour to listen to this.
I feel like we needed
to. Don't even explain it. Just say, tonight, 30 for 30. Cold meat.
I feel
just
like
the confusion alone.
I feel like we needed some kind of like hand gesture or like a gang symbol. We never had one. We were just yelling cold meat. And
it's hard to mime cold meat.
And if I remember correctly, we probably got destroyed because this was a men's league in Newark. Needless to say, basketball is pretty popular in Newark. There were some real ballers there. But, you know, it sticks in my mind. But, yeah, still to this day, I told you, if I put some leftover chicken cutlets or maybe there's some steak left for dinner, I'm in there around 8 o'clock, 8:30, just kind of pushing around the fridge looking for looking for some cold meat.
It's like a scavenger hunt for you, like literally a scavenger hunt in the fridge.
Like, what's your like? Like, if you're gonna, you know, dinner's over, you had your dinner, but you know, you got a hankering for something. You put on something on TV. You're like, you know, I'm not completely full yet. What do you like scavenging for?
I don't really scavenge. Like, if it's like cold food, I can do cold pizza.
Oh yeah,
I can do cold pots.
That's a good one. Cold pizza, good stuff.
Generally, I'll make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or I guess if I'm like super desperate for like something sweet, like a lot of times I'll have like bags of chocolate chips for future cookies or whatever. I'll just rip open a bag and just start like pouring chocolate chips down my throat.
Yeah, you like I get it, since I've been in middle school, elementary school, I get these ravenous eating where like I won't eat for a while, and then I just, anything in sight is going down. Like, the other day, I remember having, I made, like, a sandwich. Then I, like, microwaved the hot dog. Then I was taking peanut butter and jelly, just the jars, and spoonful of peanut butter, spoonful of jelly, eating it. And it's so good. But, and I've done this so many times and messed up where, like, peanut butter and jelly is so great coming in, but, like, if you have too much, it's, like, really sweet and rich and, like, like 20 minutes after the fact, it's like, oh God, like my sugar is spiking through, you know, my insulin and sugar is spiking through the roof. And
You're spooning peanut butter and jelly for 20 minutes? My God.
It went for a while.
Oh my Lord.
I think I had a pickle in there. Like, it was all things that shouldn't go together. And then the ravenous eating stops and I'm like, and then the heavy breathing starts, and then the bathroom trip goes after a while. So I still have occasionally the eating habits I had when I was in, like, seventh grade.
My Lord. Now, any chance are we going to see you do a food challenge kind of like I attempted with Randy Santel?
It's funny. I was thinking about this on the, you know, when the Nathan's Hot Dog thing was on July 4th. And this conversation probably comes up with everybody who watches it with their friends or something. It was on, and it was weird because the feed kicked out like the whole time. But the whole conversation is like, how many hot dogs do you think you could eat? And it's funny because an old boss of mine is in the Nathan's Hot Dogs eating contest every year. She does it every year. She's an older woman, and she eats like 7.5. And I'm like, why does that get you in the competition? I could do comfortably, possibly even after the bad dinner I had 20 minutes ago, I could do 7.5 if I had to. I think in competition mode, bun and dog, not like, we'll get to your thing in just a second, like what you had to do, but like the Nathan's other, bun, dog, water, I really think I could eat 15. I think I could, 12 to 15 dogs. Like, in with the spirit of competition and everything, too, yeah. Like the adrenaline, I think I could eat 15. I'm, like, sitting there, like, why does she get into this thing? Like, to me, 7.5 is a – if you're not putting down 10 to 15, 20, you should not be in the competition.
Well, I think, like – I actually looked it up because I was interested to see, like, the full results. Like, the last place in the women's competition was 5, and I said the exact same thing. I'm like, how's that even a competition? That is just like, oh, good job, Aunt May.
Dude, I'll have 5 at a barbecue. If I've been drinking at a barbecue, I'm putting down, I told you, we had this barbecue conversation not too long ago. I'll have 3 regular, and then if I'm getting drunk, I'll be as I'm walking past the table, pick one up, eat one, pick one up. I'll have 6, 7 just roaming around the backyard.
Yeah, and that's like in a 10-minute period, so it literally took her 2 minutes for 10, for 5. That is one dog every 2 minutes, which is like, that's not competitive in any way. That's not athletic at all.
That's just like they had to fill bodies on the dais there, you know? but yeah, I would say, realistically, I think I could be in that 10 to 15 hot dog ballpark. Now, years ago, and we'll tell the story real quick before we get to our guest. We had Randy Santel, who is a competitive eater, sets all these records, got a huge YouTube following. We've had him on a bunch of times. he was doing a challenge at a place called Sabretti's in, is it in Hopatcon?
Mount
Lake. Yeah, whatever. Somewhere up there. And their whole thing is they have all these crazy toppings on their hot dogs. Like, they had a s'more hot dog.
Yeah, Hershey's chocolate one. Yeah. A duck sauce one that I got stuck on.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, a whole bunch of different, a very spicy one, a very sweet, whatever. So, Mike, we thought it would be fun if Mike also did a hot dog eating thing. And you did what? 10?
11 and a half.
11 and a half. Okay. And, like, you had, you know, you had all full toppings. And I guess the challenge was to do, the full challenge was 30, I think?
30.
Yeah. So that's like an untrained guy. You did 11 and a half fully topped hot dogs. Do you think if you just did buns and dogs in the 10-minute mark in a competition, what do you think? You think you could hit 15?
Yeah. Yeah. Because like I said, I was feeling good, but it was duck sauce with those crunchy French's onions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was just a nasty combination that was not working. You know? I mean, I should have kind of did what like Randy said, like just kept on like sipping like lemonade or something like that to get past the taste of it. But it was from an untrained standpoint, I think that was like hot dog like 9 going in. So right. that's easily a hurdle when you're eating something so nasty.
Yeah, it was cool because it started off as us just like joking around. Like, Mike, it would be really fun if you did one along with like this competitive eater. And you know, 11 and a half was, I was actually like really impressed. I'm like, wow, he's killing it here.
Yeah, I think I was only like 2 off of like third best of all time or something close to that, if I recall.
Maybe like next July 4th, we should do like you should cook a bunch of dogs, I should cook a bunch of dogs. Maybe we'll have an eating competition on the maybe not on the audio of the show. We'll video it because the audio would be pretty terrible.
You brought up how boring a NASCAR event is over the radio. Hot dog eating is the champion of worst radio thing to listen to.
But yeah, I don't know how that even segues to our guest, but I'm going to figure it out here.
Hot diggity dog, we got a great guest.
So a couple years ago, we had this guy on. So he's a returning guest for the first time returning. And he is the bass player from a very successful heavy metal band. Hard rock band by the name of Atreyu. They've been doing it for a long time now. And Porter McKnight is such a really interesting guy. He does so many cool things with photography, which we'll let him explain during the interview, and some of the things he does with fans. So returning to the show for the second time, here is our friend Porter McKnight. Porter, thank you first off for giving us time. I think it was about... I don't know. I didn't look up the episode because that would be doing like research and stuff. But it's probably about 2.5 years ago, something like that. 2 years ago, you joined us and we had a good time, and you told us a lot of funny stories, and we thought it was a great interview. So we thought you'd bring you back on. So go tell us a funny story right now.
Yeah, that doesn't work like that, man.
Well, for starters, like as I was prepping for this, I saw you did an interview where you were making a burger on another podcast. So what's up? You already pre-prepared your food. I was hoping we'd be in the kitchen. We'd see some like scallions being chopped or something.
Yeah, the trail mix to the right is very upsetting. Whatever you're eating, it's not enough for us. Yeah,
this is steamed broccoli with rice and onions with Beyond Meat with a sauce that I made for it.
All right. Are you like, the chef type or?
I wouldn't consider myself a chef, but I do like to cook things.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I always liked cooking things, but when you're cooking for yourself, it's just kind of like, I don't fucking care, man. White bread and like potatoes. Sure. Let's just slice it on there. Potato sandwich. Great. Yep. Oh, I never made that. That's actually really fucking disgusting. But when I was living in Germany for a couple of years with my wife, like she was working all day. I was doing, you know, whatever it is band guys do from home and design people do from home. So I was working, but you know, I was still at home. So I didn't want her to come home to a nice home cooked meal. So
right.
I learned how to cook like fairly well. You know, with more focus on 2-people meals and something that was nice each time, you know, changing up the flavors each day, having a different styles and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, So I'm still doing it. I mean, clearly during the pandemic, I just cooked all the time. And I would still say about 9/10 of the meals we eat are at home. So when I'm at home.
That's interesting. Like, as you learn how to cook, like, and get better at it, what is it like shifting back onto the road where you're traveling all the time and, like, maybe don't have the access to cook like that? Like, is it hard to, like, eat healthy and keep on that same grind, or do you got to, like, figure that?
No, there's always something out there that's healthy and good for you, you know? Sometimes also it's nice to then not cook after you've been cooking for so long, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the first meal we ate out, I think, was pizza for my aunt's birthday, and it tasted so fucking sweet because I didn't have to labor on it.
Yeah.
Not like my wife cooks as well, but like something that we didn't have to spend the time on, you know?
Right.
She's a great cook too. But no, it's on tour, you know, you just find Chipotle or, you know, other things around. It's not that hard.
Well, let's jump into it a little bit. You know, like, I feel like I said this every week with all the guests that we've had on, like, but I find it an interesting question because we've had on so many artists, a lot of musicians, probably because you guys have had so much downtime, but we've had a lot of actors and various different things during this pandemic. And mm-hmm. I asked this to basically to everybody, like, you're a guy who's interesting because you have a whole bunch of design and photography interests and work and whatnot. So when live music shuts down and things like that for a year, were you a guy who was able to use this time, like, beneficially towards yourself, or was it a time that was, you know, really hard on you?
It depends which, I wouldn't say personality, but which side of me you ask that question to. Like, the band side? Yeah, I mean, everything I've known for the past, how many years have I been in this band? 17 years was gone, you know? I didn't get to travel much. I didn't get to see all the people I'd like to see. And that was, you know, it becomes part of your, I don't know if it's a word, but nomadicism. Yeah. It becomes like, you're just used to traveling. You're used to seeing new things. So I think that was sad. Like, you could always rely on being able to see your friends over there, your friends here, your friends there, like, especially me moving to Germany. And now I'm in Alabama, like, seeing all these people you don't get to see very often was okay when you were traveling around so much, because you still periodically got to see them. But now that I was stuck, it wasn't near as nice, you know? And obviously, like, you can't reenact the thrill of playing a show and touring. And, you know, luckily we were off cycle anyways. So mentally we were like in a pause button,
right?
And we wrote and recorded an album, you know, halfway through before the pandemic and beginning of 2020. And then we finished it during. But honestly, the other side, for the art side of me, it was really nice.
Yeah.
And in that same aspect, the reverse of what I just said, like, I haven't stopped moving in a really, really fucking long time. And in the beginning of 2019, I moved with my wife. We chose to move from Germany to where I came from in Southern Alabama. We live in the house my grandfather built in 1937.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is old for America, not so much for Germany. to where I came from. So, you know, it was nice for me to, like, plant the root. It was nice for me to know what it was like to be consistently here and consistently with my family. We adopted a dog last summer, a year ago, and she's been wonderful. I've never felt that experience as an adult, you know?
Right.
Pretty much, like, March, as everything started shutting down, my best friend, who I've lived with over the years. He was the guy that gave me my first job as a graphic designer in 2002, actually. And, like, I've worked with and for in various capacities over the last, you know, 20 years. He was like, "Hey, do you want some work?" I'm like, "Sure." So yeah. I essentially we got back from Australia. We were at my sister's house in California with my wife. We were supposed to finish the record, but then we obviously couldn't. And so I just started working. I started working like 10-hour days. It got to the point where, like, if I was awake, I could work. And so I did, because I didn't know how long that would last.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to work as much as I fucking possibly can. And so I did. And, you know, I kept doing that till I burnt out and was like, hey, I need a week off and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But like, you know, we started a business together, essentially me and my best friend. And now we're at a point where we're like having to hire other people, like, cause everything is bottlenecked through him and I. And so we need like all new designers. He needs another, creative manager. I don't know what you would call it, his role, but he does everything that he just gives me the job to do, you know? So, you know, that's been fantastic. My design side of it, you know, I'd say is me is like, and what I hope that everyone took a moment to do during the pandemic is like, I mean, we're still in it more or less, but you know, is to like reconnect to who we are.
Reset as humans. A little bit. Yeah.
Like in figure out actually what's important in our existence and take a moment to reflect on that and to weed out the bullshit. Right. True. And so I did a lot of that and it's been fucking fantastic because, you know, when you're nonstop going all the time, you can't really slow down and reconnect to that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, all in all, like I wouldn't choose for this to happen because there's been a lot of tragedy and death and loss and all these things, but it's been good to me, you know, and I'm very aware that I'm very lucky that I can say that and I can come out this other side being like, no, I'm fucking stoked.
That's awesome.
And then now we're just ready to go on a new album. Yep. So
now, out of curiosity, are you going to, as you're touring, are you going to still like balance the business side with the touring, or is it pretty much when you're on tour, it's all about Trey,
the goal is to get it to a point where I'm more of just an art director status anyways, where we can have people working with us and they can get, you know, it either most the way there or all the way there. And I can be like, that's great. Change this though. Add this, move this around. Let's flip that. And then that's what I can do on the road. I can be just like the quality control, you know, and if there's a fire that needs to be put out, I can put it out is how we say it. You know, is there anything on fire today? Is when we start the day.
Yeah.
So yes and no, like obviously it'll be, you know, on tour a day for me is like you wake up, you know, contingent upon when you went to bed that 8 hours later. And I get up and you find a place to go to the bathroom, you find some food, and I do something called the photo odyssey. Yep. Starting early afternoon. So I do that, then I do sound check, then I play a show, then I'm done. So the only times I really would have to work are days off or in the morning. So I don't know. We'll see, man.
So you're not going to have your cell phone on you on stage. It's like, hold up. I got to take this.
No. That's the great part.
About... Sorry, everyone.
that's the great part about what working with my best friend is. It's extremely malleable and the client can wait, you know, like if I have to take care of something, you know, like I forgot that I needed to go to a doctor's appointment with my mom today. She needed to go with it. Right. And then like, we had to take our dog to the vet cause she was playing. She went fucking hard and was playing too hard on the beach and hurt her paws, turning too much. We don't know. So my wife took her there. So we had that happening. And then like we were here and we have contractors cause we're renovating the attic and then, power went out. So like all this shit happened and I only really did like 2 hours, an hour and a half of work today. And it's fine. It's not the end of the world, you know?
Yeah.
It's my point is it's very malleable. So if he's aware that I'm going on tour, he knows who I am, and he's like, we'll be fine, we'll get through it.
So when we had interviewed you a while back, the photo odyssey idea was kind of relatively new. You had started it, you were invested in it, and it was getting. So for people who are listening now, maybe for the first or the second time, what is the photo odyssey and like where has it gone since then? Is it still like as successful as it was? And if you could kind of explain that to the listeners that are listening now.
Yeah. So it was just to give like a brief what it is. It was born from you go on tour. You see a new city each day, but it's really hard to like want to go out and explore. Even as a photographer like me who loves architecture, it was hard sometimes. You're just like, man, I don't want to fuck about it, man. I'm just going to stay here. And you play video games or you hang out in the venue or you do whatever you do. but I wanted to start going out more. I wanted to start interacting with people more. I wanted to kind of use my time more wisely on tour. So I quite literally meditated on it. And with that idea of like, what the fuck could I do? And then at one point it just kind of popped in my head, like I should start teaching classes on the road more or less. So I developed something called the Photo Odyssey with my wife, and we the first one, we had it open-ended and we had like 12 or 13 people. And I realized when I explained to you what we do, it was just way too many people.
Right.
So I limited it to 5 people now, and we meet up. I teach them how to use their device. It doesn't have to be a camera. It can be a phone. It's not about taking photos. It's about how to like view existence in a different way and to connect to the way that you view existence, because it's different between anyone that's trying to capture it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so we talk a little bit about that. I do show you how to use your device, if it's a camera or a phone, whatever. I still give you the best knowledge that I can. And then we wander the city for a couple of hours together, your city. We just go out from the venue and, you know, I talk a little bit about intuition and how that can guide you in the creative process and the ways that I've found when traveling in that aspect of photography. Like I oftentimes, like, you know, unless you're in like Paris and you want to go see the Eiffel Tower and this exact thing, a lot of times you wake up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you're like, I don't know what's fucking good here. I could do a bunch of research, but I might miss all the cool shit. Mm-hmm. Half the time, you know, the classic and very cliche and trite thing, it's not the journey, or it's not the destination, it's the journey. You know what right. I mean? So like, yep. So I'll step out and I'll just look one way or the other, kind of look around, and there's always a direction that my head won't be able to move from. So I just go that way and I just continue that. And I find weird shit and I find way cool things that you could never find in doing research online, you know?
Yeah.
So we do that. We go back to the venue or somewhere nearby. If there's like sound check and it's too loud or there's nowhere to go, then I teach you how to do the editing, the post-processing of the photos. And then I give a photo pass, and then you have a photo pass that you can document all of the bands that night.
So awesome. I love that, man.
The first one was like that. 13 people.
Yeah.
Which is like a sea of people on the photo pit. I was like, oh, fuck. all the like hired photographers that day are just like, why are so many people here? What the fuck? So I'm like, okay, let me limit this a little bit.
So where has it come to now? Like, especially like that you guys have been shut, has it been shut down, or have you figured out ways to kind of keep that going?
No, I'm going to do it 100% on the, on this next, this next touring cycle, we're 100% doing it.
It's awesome.
Where it is now and where, like, it made me a better artist. It made me a better creator. It made me a better human being, because I had to, I learned that I'm really good at teaching. I learned that I'm really good at talking and explaining and inspiring people to be better creators, better versions of themselves, to see the world differently. Like I mentioned, like, those are all things that, like, I've learned genuinely excite me. And that's changed my perspective on existence. You know what I mean? And before this, I would say that overall, I didn't like taking pictures of humans. I liked taking pictures of nature or architecture or whatever. But I started, even on the first couple of days, I started to like look around and I would see these people in this environment really enjoying the moment and finding these cool angles. And so I would document them doing that. And then it found me. I was like, fuck, I'm really good at taking portraits of people. And so it's made me a better photographer. It's made me more well-rounded. I think there hasn't been a drawback. I think the only drawback there was for a little bit is I'm just not used to talking that much. So I would go on stage and my voice would be a little raspy till I got used to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just been really fun. And it's really fun to like connect more with
I love that project. I just think it's such a unique idea. It's awesome.
Thank you.
As you guys are getting ready to tour, I'm just kind of curious, how do you prepare for this after being out for a while? Are you getting like almost getting cardio ready and stuff like that? Because the Trayu, they got that intense like rock and roll heavy sound and all. It's not a group thing where you can just like get wooden stools and go, we're going acoustic tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So
we did that actually recently and it was weird.
Really?
Yeah. We, for the first time ever, we played acoustic because of the pandemic and because of everything, we couldn't play a show on our release date. So we, on the Friday of our release date, we had our first day of our Twitch channel that we just started as a band. Myself and our singer Brandon both have been doing Twitch for a while, him more than me, but in duration. But so we did. We played acoustic. We like played some of the new songs acoustic, four new songs. We redid some old songs. We actually were asked the day before to play on Danny Wimmer's Space Zebra Twitch channel, and he wanted us to play a live show, and we're like, we're not ready for that.
Yeah.
but we can play acoustic, and they're like, okay. So we did, and it was fucking awesome, and like, it was really fun, and it sounded really good. Like, we are all singing, we're all having a great time. Like, Taylor hooked us up with some new acoustics. Fuck yeah, shout out Taylor. And like, it was really, really unique. Like, Wes Borland is one of the people that's the, like, I guess presenters you would call them for the Space Zebra thing. And we played Becoming the Bull acoustic. And he was like, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can't imagine that song any other way. I'm like, I can hardly imagine it this way because we just started playing it 2 days ago.
Yeah.
But thank you, Wes Borland. Like, what?
Thank you, Wes Borland.
So, so that was fun, you know? Yeah. And, but yeah, like to get back to your original question, I kind of went on a little side note there.
Oh, enjoyed it.
I will definitely need to do cardio, especially with the shift that happened in the last year. I'll be singing a lot more, and it's going to take a lot more out of me to be able to yell for that long and still run around like an idiot. So I definitely will be, I think I'm going to start rowing.
Okay. On a machine, or you're just going to go like up the river?
I mean, I wish, right? I would bring my fucking kayak on tour or whatever you would do for rowing. I don't think that.
Dude, no, on a machine. Rowing and the photo odyssey, like photos, oh, but you know,
rowing odyssey.
Yeah. That's another
with
idea, right there.
Strapped to our heads.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Did Trey just put an above ground pool on stage? What the hell is going on up there?
Amazing. No, so I'll be doing some of that. Like, we already work out. We're already fairly fit. If you follow Brandon at all on social
media. Yeah, you guys are definitely not like the fat man. You're not. Yeah. You guys are definitely all pretty in shape.
So, yeah, there is an okay amount of cardio that's going to go into it and that has gone into it in the past as well, you know?
So we got to jump into it. The new album is it's called Baptize, and you mentioned a little bit before you recorded some songs pre-pandemic. I guess you did some during it. What is that process like as far as recording during the pandemic or even writing during the pandemic, as far as like, could you guys get together and jam, or was it like more of sending files to one another and like, I like this song?
No,
like, how did that come together?
So we were already in the studio. So we did half of the album like before, like I said, in January, right. And that was a normal situation. And for the first time ever in our band, and this is something that I was originally vehemently against, which I am rarely that way. Brandon and Feldman, our producer, were like, I want you guys to write with other artists. Try that out. See what it's like to have a different brain in the room. And I was just like, you know, like, I don't know why I was so against it. And then they're like, I think we should try it. I'm like, I don't think so. Let me think about it. And as time went on, I'm looking, I'm doing research. I'm like, everyone writes with everyone. Like, why do I have this closed off mentality? Like, I'm not a hardcore kid. I'm not some like punk DIY guy. Like, and I'm a fairly open mind, not a very open-minded human being in regards to almost everything else. Like, fuck it. Let's try it. Let's do it. And it was awesome. I mean, we wrote three songs with Mark Hoppus. We had grandson come in with his writing partner, Kevin, and we wrote amazing song. Like, we had some really, really, really fucking talented people. And it took us to a place that we couldn't have got on our own, but not to a place that wasn't us. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's still like having that extra person in the room to be like, hey, look over there instead of looking over here this whole time. Like, look over there. It's always been there, but just maybe try this melody this way. Maybe here's a word that then would inspire us in a whole new direction. And it was really, really intriguing. And I don't think you could say any of those songs don't sound like us. But it was really, really fun. So then on the second half of the record. We clearly couldn't do that because of the pandemic. We did go into the studio almost as normal. There were no guests. There was no anyone else that came in. It was just, you know, the four of us at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Cause this was post the transition, and Feldman and his engineer. And, you know, I've taken this thing very seriously. For one, like, where we were staying at my sister's house, like, her husband is late 60s. She has a daughter. There's so many fucking mysteries about it then and still now. So I just, we all taken it very seriously. So I just made sure that, like, we made sure that everyone that was involved in that process, especially our band, were like, we were good and we were smart. We were masking up. So when we went in the studio, like, the first day, I'm not going to lie, like, the first day or so, we were fully masked and trying to do that. But then over time, like, you just kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
And you're trying to sing and then you don't want to get. So we did it, you know, the best we could. And it was weird. It was a little strange, but I don't think we let it get to us. And I think we wrote some of the best songs to the album on that. And, you know, like I said, it was also post when it was just the four of us that now. And so we just, we felt like we had a lot to prove and we had a lot to, you know, I was now a singer, whereas before I was just a bassist, not just a bassist, but you know what I mean? Like, my role as a member of this band as a bassist has just always been more supportive and just helping out where people are lacking. I bring things to the table when others can't, and I support other people. Like, especially when I joined the band in 2004, it was like, okay, I got these two singers and this one writes most of the lyrics and these two guitarists and they write it. So, I'll just help out. I'll do what I can when I can. And mm-hmm. obviously over time, like, my role has grown in influence and I have fallen more into that role. And it's been, you know, all five of us doing all the things, but still, like, vocally, I was still the supporting member. And so after that, I very much am not now. And it was interesting. That's like,
awesome.
It was like before this band, I was the lead singer in most every other band I'd been in. And I was the main, you know, I wrote a lot of the melodies, not most of the melodies. I wrote most of the lyrics. And so it was interesting for me to, I guess, like, open the floodgates of who I was back then, because it had kind of been blocked off, and connect to who I was back then, but not through, like, trying to be that, but still viewing it through the lens of who I am now and the artist that I am now and the experiences that who I am today. You know what I mean? And it was fucking awesome. And, like, there's a song we have called Catastrophe that, you know, I'd had the melody pop into my head during meditation. I brought that in. We started writing the song. So it was just spiraling. We had the chorus done. We had the first verse done, the intro and everything. And the second verse, we had the riff going. And, like, we're just kind of listening to it. And I just, an idea pops into my head, like, lyrics and, like, I guess timing, because it's not melody, because I'm yelling things. But I'm like, I have an idea. So I just went in, did it, laid it down one take. And they're like, that was fucking awesome. Moving on. I'm like, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Like, I can do this. Like, I can still. And it was a lot of, like, proving to myself that I could still do it. And I could, and more. And so when we finished the album, it was that feeling of, like, which honestly we had on in our wake too, like, you finish it and you're like, I don't want to be done.
Yeah.
Like, you're just sad because it's so much fun. And we're lucky enough to be that kind of band that, like, you give us money in a studio and we'll just keep writing. Like, we could just keep, we wrote two songs in a day sometimes, wrote and recorded. So, like, it's just fun, man. This is the genuinely, I've said it before and I'll say it again, this is the most exciting point of my musical career ever.
That's cool.
And I think the band, I know the band echoes that sentiment as well. So it's fun. We've been waiting on this album. We finished it almost a year to the day it was released. And we're excited for it to be out there, you know?
It's awesome, man.
You kind of brought up something interesting. Like, you were the new person in the established band with the Treyu, and now going into this tour, you're like the veteran as you have a new head vocalist on the band. I'm kind of curious, was there any kind of, like, things that you were maybe uncomfortable, it took you a while to get used to starting the band, that you pass along to the new member, or Is it just pretty much a family thing where it's like a little brother, get over here and give him a noogie and just.
So what we did is we have our drummer and singer, Brandon. He came out from behind the kit and went up to be a front man. And we got our old drum tech and fantastic drummer and human being, Kyle Rosa, who played in Hell or High Water with Brandon. He's played in, you know, we met him when he played in a band with Joey Bradford, who's the guitarist that he used. He plays in Dead American now with Cove from Exaosen, if you remember that.
Yep.
So we've known him a long time. He's a fantastic human being. And we actually, in the weirdest way, had like a trial run with this lineup unknowingly. So in 2019, like 3 days before we're leaving for tour, our old singer was like, I can't go.
What?
And it was a tour in Germany, in Europe, where we're playing like Rock'em Ring, Rock'em Park in Germany. There's fucking 90,000 people there. Like we're doing Slam Dunk Festival in Britain, tons of festivals in between and headlining shows. We're like, we have to go. He's like, I can't go. Like my back's fucked up. I have to have surgery for a hernia where all this shit. And my doctor said, I can't go. We're like, fuck, that sucks, dude. Like, what are we going to do? He's like, I don't know. I can't do it. We're like, we have to go though. He's like, I'm sure you'll figure it out. Like, go do it. And we're like, okay. So
It'd be cool if you just opted for a slam dunk contest tour over there instead.
Just change that. That would have been funny. You meant like basketball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was one festival. Yeah. Your show is called Slam Dunk. It would not have made sense to the rest of the year. But I like that. My mind just went to like us in Harlem Globetrotters outfits.
Picturing you hanging on the rim with like water and sweat flying from the
beer. I'm like 5'8¾". Like I could dunk.
100%.
So we were like, okay, I can do all the screaming parts. Brandon, you can do all the other parts where he sings. But like the four of us on instruments and stuck doesn't feel like our band. We have such like a movement and a whirlwind up there, you know? So we're like, all right, well, let's get a drummer. Brandon, you go up front. Let's get Kyle. Like, I don't even think it was, let's get a drummer. It was like, let's get Kyle. He knows our songs. He's been around us for so long. He's a good human being. So without a single practice stateside and one practice in York, England, jeez, where fucking 9/10 of it was technical difficulties, we rehearsed like 3 songs or something.
Yeah.
And so we went on that first show and slam dunk in front of like, you know, a tent full of human beings, all excited to play. Most people don't know we didn't announce that it was going to be any different. We're just like, let's fucking go out and rage. I don't think we announced. I can't remember. Last year kind of wiped some things clean. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways. We got up on stage and I remember, I think it was like a song we have called Doomsday was the first song we played. And like, I just remember like going and I'd already done some like doubling screaming parts from that part. So that wasn't any different for me. So I'm up there and I'm singing and I just feel like the stage is going to fucking collapse behind me. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And it's just Brandon, just boom, boom, like freight training back and forth. I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm singing and I look and he's just having a blast and everyone's going off and Kyle's just raging. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
We just had a really fucking good time. Like, honestly, that was one of my favorite tours we've ever done. Like, there were so many things that should have gone wrong or should have been negative on that tour, but they just weren't. Like, for lack of a better word at this moment, the vibe was fucking awesome. And I think if you had never seen us before, you'd be like, who the fuck is this band? And I think if you'd seen us before, you'd be like, I'm sad he's not here, but
that was awesome.
This is all fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it was awesome. So then whenever everything went down, we were like, well, what are we going to do? And I think I was like, remember 2019? I don't know if I was exactly the person, but we were like, let's just do what we did there. Like, it worked.
Yeah.
Like, let's see if Kyle's down. And he was and is. So
it's awesome, man.
Excellent.
So you get the new album, Baptize. You got a tour starting, I believe, September 3rd, I think.
Yeah, we have some shows then, and then a proper tour starting November.
September 3rd. So how much salivating have you been doing now to just get out on the road and put this album out to people and put live music back? It's so awesome because, like, all these bands that I love now, and it's like, tour. I'm like, now I'm getting the itch to, like, go to shows and watch these bands, and I see you guys putting this up. It's a big-ass tour, and how much are you ready to get the hell out there and start playing some music again?
I have a weird thing where, like, of course I'm excited. Of course I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But, like, I think this is honestly a byproduct of touring for so long where you just have to turn off certain facets of your life. Like, God, when you're touring, you're like, well, I can't go to a consistent gym or eat consistent food or do anything consistently.
Right,
so
right, yeah.
I'm just going to get on with how life is. So I think I just, like, I won't realize how it feels till the moment I'm on stage again.
So that's a really interesting point.
Like when we took a, sorry to interrupt you. When we took a pause for a few years in end of 2010 till 2014, like, I didn't think I missed playing shows. I wasn't excited to play shows again. I was like, I like writing music or recording. And then I got on stage and was like, oh, so,
yeah.
So I think I'm just waiting for that moment. Like, as of now, we've been so distanced from everyone for so long. I'm still in the, like, remembering what it's like to be next to other human beings again. And the thought of, like, my job is to pack as many fucking bodies in a room as I can is terrifying. Yeah. Like, it's terrifying in a way. Like, you know?
Yeah.
That's a divisive topic. We don't need to go down that road.
But, no, like, that's funny.
In my brain, you know?
Because, like, I'm relating to you as just as a comic. I've done, now that the comedy's been back for about a month and a half, a little bit longer. And I've had some really interesting, because comedy's not like music, right? Like, music is like, you could play and, like, the sound takes over the room and people could be talking still and it's still good. Comedy, like, I've noticed all these shows, people, like, have forgotten how to go out. Like, it's just, they're talking nonstop. It takes a good, like, 15, 20 minutes at the show for people to be like, oh, yeah, like, I remember comedy. We're supposed to, like, focus on the stage and not talk to people. Like, talk to the first show I did back at the venue I run, it was mayhem for 20 minutes. It was like, I went up there, I'm like, I'm just going to be quiet for a little bit, because it was like probably families and friends that haven't seen each other in forever, and they went out for, oh my God, like, talking's going to happen no matter what. But they were just insane. But and it's not all their fault, but it's just been really interesting to see the vibe of the room.
Realize it's not your fault.
Yeah, no, it's probably, it's like, my fault.
No disrespect meant to you. People are just stoked to exist.
I could, like, be also saying that because I bombed that night. But no, no. But it is really interesting to see people, like, coming back and, like, remembering, like, oh yeah, this is what life was like before all this. But Porter, we're coming up against our time here, man. I love having you on, man. I'd love to have you on next year again after your tour and see what you're up to. You're such an interesting guy. The new album's called Baptize. Where can people check out the Photo Odyssey, Atreyu's work, and whatever's going on with you?
Atreyu Official is pretty much everything for that. Atreyu Music on Twitch. Photo Odyssey is the Photo Odyssey on Instagram. You can go to my page on Instagram at Porter McKnight and find it a little bit easier.
Right.
I do Twitch every, like, couple times a week, which we didn't even go down that road, but it's fucking incredible. Kind of how, like, Photo Odyssey has made me a better artist and human. This has done that in different ways and different avenues of my existence. And it's been fucking awesome.
It's such an awesome project. It's my favorite.
Just wonderful community building stuff and making me a better artist. So I have Art Wednesday. Literally, once this is done, I'm going to go live on Art Wednesday and draw, I think, tonight, which is something that I never showed anyone ever. Until I showed like my wife and Brandon or a couple of people, but now on Twitch I did it and they fucking loved it. And that's, they awesome. Like were voting for me to do it. And we had nights where I let them choose and, I can see the time, I'm aware, don't worry. And, like, you know, we're doing this sort of drawing and they're like, why don't you make a coloring book? I'm like, coloring book. You think that'd be cool? They're like, fuck yeah. And like the way and style of the, how I draw, just come and see if you want. It really does lend to that as conducive to that. I'm like, well, that's fucking amazing.
That is awesome.
We've like designed t-shirts together. We've done, you know, we played a lot of games together. I play, you know, various and assorted games with people in the stream, with other streamers. It's just really fucking fun. And it's really cool. Fun when I've been so busy with that design world to have a dedicated couple hours a week to be like, I'm just going to fuck off and play video games for these 3 hours. I'm going to go draw for 4 hours and hang out. Like, it's been really nice, man.
That's awesome. Porter, thanks so much, man. Good luck with the new album. Good luck with the new the tour, and good luck with all the projects you got going on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, man.
Same to y'all. Thanks for your time. Thanks for having me back.
No problem.
Always down.
And can you just hey, this is Porter McKnight from Atreyu. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Hey, this is Porter McKnight from Atreyu, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Hey, thanks so much, man. Yeah. Tell Tim when you see him he sucks, and I'm definitely the better brother of the family. And,
I won't, but I like it.
Debatable.
But yeah, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, guys. All the best.
Take care.
Take care, Porter.
Later, y'all.
All right, Porter McKnight, Berlew. Porter McKnight, good friend of the show.
Very much so. I still look forward to that above ground pool being on stage as he's kayaking, just ripping Atreyu songs.
I feel like Porter could blast some hot dogs. I feel like he looks like a guy that could take him down.
Like, if you took all of our guests, who would you think would be your last one you would pick? Who's the one that's the last pick, like schoolyard-wise? We were doing a hot dog eating team contest.
The worst hot dog eater. Wow.
Yeah. I'm sure we had vegans on the show, but that doesn't really technically count.
Yeah. Let's see. This is a tough question.
I mean, Lenny Dykstra doesn't have any teeth, so that might hold him back a little bit.
All right, I got mine.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Gift of Gab.
That's a dark answer right there, but...
I'm sorry. No, Gift of Gab. He actually put up something the other day on Facebook. He actually passed away. I think he might have been the first guest... possibly the first guest we've had. That's
we have one in the gray area that's could be number one.
Yeah. But I wouldn't care. But Gift of Gab was an awesome interview for artist from Blackalicious. He died at 50 years old.
That's terrible, man. He was dealing with a lot of, it was cancer, right?
I know he had a lot of kidney and liver issues. I'm not 100% sure. I even remember when we interviewed him, he had like a big coughing spell for like, I don't know if you remember, it was like 5 minutes long. We're like, take your time, no big deal. Like,
yeah.
So
I do recall that because I told him a spoonful of peanut butter takes care of hiccups. Mm. I think I was at an interview saying he was having bad hiccups.
So maybe that's what I've been doing at the fridge in the middle of the night. Just taking care of those hiccups. I haven't had hiccups in a long time.
You don't have hiccups. I know.
I don't know, Mike. I no one comes to mind. Do you have someone in mind? Maybe it'll hit me in a second.
Ooh.
Worst hot dog.
Now we have to actually like look up people and all that. I mean,
yeah, we'll
Lucy Froggen, she's been doing a lot of health kick things, so I think she might like tame it down nowadays.
Yeah, well, whatever. Well, we'll nix that exciting conversation for people there. But So I wanted to bring up. Been talking a lot of comedy lately, but so there's this guy. I never actually worked for him. And he reached out a few times, like asking me for recommendations for acts. He asked me to do a show once, and I couldn't do it. And he just like randomly messaged me, maybe like a week and a half ago. Hello, Scott. Just sent you a message on Facebook. When you get a chance, please send me your number. I may need two comedians for August 21st, but I have to discuss it with you. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, no big deal. Sure, I'll take the gig. Then he said, then he messaged me on Facebook. Scott, are you open? August 18th, 7 p.m. August 21st. I need a very strong headliner. Can you please send me your number? Thank you. Okay.
Oh, strong headliner, Scott Brennan. I like that title.
No, no, no. I'm probably emceeing. He wants me to bring a strong headliner. Okay.
Ooh, okay, gotcha.
So I said, sure, here's my number. I can get that done for you. I'm open. Scott, like I said, please hold August 21st for me as MC. I need a very strong closer. They used to have blah, 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 and before that, blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. They have to be very good because that's what this customer is used to. I could definitely try to call you this week. Call me anytime. I know tons of comics. Okay?
Yeah. So before you continue, I'd just like to say, when you have to sell your show three times on how amazing it's going to be, I'm already worried. But go on.
I know. And he's asking me for this very strong hand. So then he messaged me on email. Okay. Scott, let's try to talk on Monday. Like I said, I need an MC. The budget is around this, and I need a very strong headliner for this. I said, okay, where's the show? Tells me where the show is. It's in a town called Hewitt, New Jersey. Let's try to talk on Monday. I need a very strong closer, and I will tell you who they really like in the past so you can get an idea.
Well, Scott, I'm going to stop you right there. I know you work with a lot of the great comedians, but nobody comes to mind that can hit that Hewitt, New Jersey crowd.
I know.
That's where I think the story is going. You're like, listen, I got Jim Brewer. And you're like, do you know what we're talking about here? We are talking about Hewitt, New Jersey crowd, Scott.
Very strong.
What are you doing?
Very strong. So now that was Facebook Messenger. What I just read you was email. Now through text. Good evening, Scott. Just want to make sure you're holding August 24th of me as the MC. Like I said, I need a very strong closer. Blah, blah, blah is the middle. Who can you recommend that I could see on YouTube this week? I would give you a call, but I just walked in and I have to eat something after a long day. Now, I've given this guy my number three different times. Like, just call me. Okay? So I said, do you need me to MC or middle? Definitely. And see, I had said on the original message, let's try to talk so I can get a real good headliner. Scott, are you getting my messages? August 21st, I have you down as the MC. Can you guess what he's going to say next?
Something to do with the show being not so strong?
I need a very strong closer because the middle act is very strong. I could talk to you this evening after 7:30 when I get back. Please let me know what's going on. Yeah, I got him. I'll be recording at 7:30. I need more info. Just send me via phone. Like, I need to tell the comics what the pay is, you know, and thing.
Yep.
It's an evening show near Ringwood, New Jersey. Three comedians. The budget is this. Okay. And I said, what would my pay be? Because I'm going to bring a headliner and I'm going to be emceeing. Like, I'm not your booker. I could pay this. All right. I said, I could see if I can get a headliner for this, and I take that. That would be fine. Scott, please keep in mind the headliners that they really like. Blah, 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 blah. They don't mind dirty humor, but they have to be funny. And my partner and I have to see something on YouTube on the headliner. Sure. I said, I'm reaching out to a few, and if they're available, I'll send you their links. Thank you. Are you familiar with blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah? Yes. I said, I had this account for 10 years. They like those three. Just keep that in mind. I said, sure. Is it a fundraiser? Blah, blah, blah is available. He's one of my favorites. This is not a fundraiser. It's just a regular comedy show, and it may be outside if weather permits. I said, gotcha. I sent him a link of one of my favorite comics. He looks very good. This is where it turns. He looks very good, but we need to see at least three others. Thank you. I said three other videos? He said, yes, please. I said, of him? He said, of different comics. I'm like, and he said, like I said, he's great, and we probably would use him, but my partner wants to see more. So this is where I said, dude, I can't find and book four available headliners for you. If you want some names, I can give them to you. I'm not the booker of this show. If you want some recommendations, I'll send you some names. If not, I'll just MC it, and you find whoever you want to headline. Scott, all I want is their names. Add a link so we can see them. I'm not saying you have to book them, but I can't go more paying more than this. I said, go search this name, this name, this name. They're all on YouTube. This is perfect. Do you think that they would take this much money? I said, most likely. That sounds great. When are you going to be free in the evenings this week so I could talk? I said, I'm available anytime this week. Still no call. So essentially this guy wants a very strong headliner, clearly.
Yeah.
But he wants me to now find him four available headliners in less than a month and send video links of all these people. That this certainly sounds like I'm booking the show.
Yeah, it sounds like a very bad reality show pitch.
Yeah.
It looks like some kind of contest. One normal guy books four funny comedians, but who will be Ringwood bound?
So essentially what he's saying, so he's the booker of the show. He's essentially asking me to now MC the show, to ask for, give him four names that are available that day, send videos, discuss the budget with them, and then he, just gets whatever the booker fee is, like whatever he's making on it. Like I said, dude, if you want me to book the show, you're going to pay a lot more money than that. Like I'm not doing all this legwork, and you just be like, I got a very strong headliner. Thank you very much. I'm great.
Well, I mean, I guess there's so much going on with this show that, like, he doesn't have time for all the semantics of the people. No, he needs, I could tell, like, when you send them the four comedians, they meet in a boardroom and there's, like, 12 people. There's probably, like, the mayor of Ringwood is there. That's how big we're talking about.
Wow.
Like, they are serious and all. And, like, somebody comes up and it's like, that's a prop comedian. We don't do prop comedians down here in Ringwood. I tell you that.
Yeah.
We've been a city for about 300 years, Scott, and we've never had a prop comedian. We ain't starting now down here in Ringwood.
Already in my head, I'm thinking, just abandon this shit, man, because I guarantee I'm going to go there. It's going to be like 40 people. It's going to be like a fundraiser type crowd, like kind of like being like a VFW hall. I could see it in my mind. Like, they're going to be like, if the headliner has a bad set, they're going to take it out on me. If I have a bad set, they're going to be like, well, we can't pay you what we get. Like, it already sounds like a terrible situation. So I don't know what's going to come of it. I gave them two available comedians and I'm like, there's YouTube. Here's all their names. But, if you're interested in running comedy shows, this is not the way to do it. Like, this is not how you don't go through like a fourth party and have them do all the work and then you communicate with whoever you're putting the show on for. Like, I don't know if this guy's I've never met him before. I've only met him through like Facebook or something. I don't even know what he looks like, but I think he runs a lot of like concerts and stuff. Maybe this isn't the avenue for him. Maybe stick to music.
I think he's underselling it, Scott. I think this is your big break right here. I feel that first off, where is that city? Is that North or South Jersey?
That's North Jersey. It's in Bergen County.
Okay. I 35 years in Jersey. Had no clue where you're talking about when you said that city right off the bat. That's how huge it is. It's so secluded that only the creme la creme show up for these comedy shows.
It's guys. Such a big break for me that he didn't even originally ask me to be on the show. He just asked me to book all his comics for the show.
Yeah, well, he's testing you, Scott. He knows you have the chops, but do you have the connections to make it in Northern New Jersey comedy? And you know it's a big show when he says it may or may not be outside.
Right.
The indecisiveness tells me how huge it is. Like, they can't even cement the location yet, Scott. That's how big it is.
Oh, so like if I do get the very strong headliner, it might be like thousands of people outside.
Yeah. Like, they were going to book like the local hockey rink, but once they look at that YouTube video of that comedian and they go, oh my God, this is the one. They're going to have to see if Giant Stadium is available.
You mean the four videos I send? Yeah, the four links.
It's going to be an episode of this reality TV show where we have the judges looking over the comedy and just like, I like his style, but does he have the stage presence to make it here?
I don't know. There's some bizarre people in comedy. We talked about this last week, but you guys have to stop pigeonholing comedy in places it doesn't need to be. I'll give you one little hint. If there's TVs on in the venue you're doing comedy during the show, it's already not a good venue for it. If they can't be bothered to turn off the baseball game, it's a bad venue. If there's a bar in the middle of the room, it's a bad venue. Like, it doesn't need to be, like, it doesn't have, that place does not need comedy. They can have other things. They can have someone play acoustic guitar in the corner. They do not need comedy. Please stop. Please stop.
Scott, you know what I'm thinking? I think our fans should send us links to what they've done on YouTube. It doesn't even have to be comedy. And you should start submitting our fans to the show. Hey, let me throw this out. Jonathan Antoine.
Oh.
Let's get the Fantwans into Ringwood. Can you imagine the scene? As he is belting opera comedy up there on stage. Like, he has this whole, I know he figured out the whole bit about the nuclear opera man, okay? I know he's got a solid 25 right there alone. And the Fantwans will be going berserk. Like, the guy would be telling you, like, Scott, you did too good. Now we might have to go to other unknown cities in New Jersey and do the show.
Opera comedy. Sounds great. do you think, like comedy opera, if you were to do it, like, do you just, like, this is how I picture comedy opera. Like,
okay,
you're telling a joke normally. Like, you're telling, like, hey, so, like, you know, me and my wife went out to eat, blah, blah, blah. She did this, blah, blah, blah. And then when the punchline comes, you just go, bah! Like, you just, like only the punchlines are in opera.
Ooh, I like it. First off, I'm going to call it com-opery. That's my term for it.
Com-opery? That doesn't even flow off the tongue.
I gave you
verbalions, like, shenanigang. Com-opery?
Whoa. It was shenanigaverse.
Oh, that's
shenanigang was from our audience.
That's what it was. That's what it was. Shenanigaverse.
Yeah. It worked.
What about, like, copra?
Ooh. But then it sounds like cops doing opera.
I mean, that is an idea right there.
Ooh.
Are you arrested? Someone on a DUI last night. But yeah, that's how I picture comedy opera. Like, all the punchlines are just these explosions of, like, opera.
I mean, it's got to be, like, a really long joke. Like, most of these, like, songs are, like, a good 15, 20 minutes. So, like, you can't do one-liners in opera, you know? You're just looking for the applause way too fast. I could see, like, a duo up there, like, kind of like Phantom of the Opera, you know?
Oh.
Like, the one guy's got the half mask on, and he's telling, like, a knock-knock joke, and you got the lady, who's that?
What does she sound like again?
You could just repeat it as you spit up your beer.
I did. I just spit beer all over myself.
Just like your broccoli.
Yeah.
Good job, Scotty.
Oh, no, should I look it up off the bar here?
Yep. Look. You're not going anywhere, Scott. We're not ending this podcast until that beer is licked up.
Oh, in that case. but anyway, I guess it is time to kind of wrap this thing up.
One little follow-up for you, Scott, from our conversation last week about people interfering with sports. Did you hear about the Japanese woman who shot a water gun at the Olympic torch?
No. Did it go out?
No. She didn't do it.
That'd be great if the eternal flame went out with a water gun.
We're just looking at each other like, I guess we got to go back to Greece, get another one. I mean, what is the procedure? Do they have like a backup torch that they lit up?
I don't think it actually stays lit. I think they just light it in the morning for their little march of the torch and then put it out when they get to their destination.
Can you imagine how boring that job's got to be? Well, what's my job again? Well, when I'm asleep for 8 hours, you're just in the corner holding the torch, making sure it doesn't go out.
It was funny. I was seeing a former guest of the show, Philip Pritchard. He's the keeper of the cup, the Stanley Cup. He was posting some interesting things, like following the apparently the Tampa Bay Lightning are going nutso with the Stanley Cup. I mean, there were some rumors. There was like a they were showing some pictures of a dented Stanley Cup, but like I don't know if that was true. But anyway, Philip Pritchard posted like he was out on like a boat, like with all these, like, it looked like models running around. And like, I was like, damn, Phil, you know, that's a pretty cool job.
Yeah. These Tampa people know how to party. Like freaking Brady is throwing the trophy from boat to boat. That's probably how the Stanley Cup got freaking knocked up. They probably tried to do the same thing. It's probably a good 50 pounds more than the NFL, the Lombardi trophy.
Yeah. This guy's playing mini golf with the cup on the just on the course.
That's amazing. He must have been like so happy. He's like, "Don't send me to Montreal. Don't send me to Montreal.
Yeah, right?
Please destroy them. Please."
I still think my as far as the Devils go, I always thought like Marty Brodeur having a roller hockey tournament with all his friends for the Stanley Cup was a pretty cool idea. You know, like,
yeah,
that was a pretty good one. And I think the Dallas Stars like brought it on stage with Pantera, and like Pantera threw the cup off like a roof or something like that.
I know there was like rumors. I don't know if they were ever. We didn't even like. There was like rumors that the Rangers brought the cup on the Howard Stern show, and somebody defecated it.
Jesus.
I remember that was like the biggest rumor, where they kind of made more rules to what you could do.
I also heard, which I do not know it's true, I would love to ask, that there's a party cup and then the actual Stanley Cup. Like, there's a cup that goes around, and then there's a cup that just stays in,
I mean, that would be the smart bet. I mean, that's what they got to do with the Olympic torch now that this woman almost put it out. I mean, they got to have the, it's like, ha-ha, you took care of the party torch.
Imagine people like in the other sports tried to do things like someone defecates on the Lombardi trophy.
For the love of God, there's no hole in it. What are you trying to do?
This is horrendous.
Imagine you're the person who gets it the next day.
Yeah, Stanley Cup, I don't care what anybody says, it's by far the best trophy in sports, by far. But
yeah. Definitely concur with that. But just to follow up, the woman was heard saying no Olympics and stop the games in Japanese while shooting the torch with a water gun. She was promptly arrested afterwards.
Oh, all right. Well, kudos to her. I'm sure that must be fun paying that kind of bail and fines and all the stuff just to squirt a water gun at the torch.
I mean, it's worth doing 12 years of hard labor. Yeah.
Berla, let's get out of here. Good episode tonight. Anything to promote?
I'm going to promote a friend of mine, Starlet Carbon. She is starting a new line of vegan-based skincare line. It's in honor of her daughter who passed away pretty recently. The brand is called Green Gem Love. She's starting up in honor of her daughter, Ashley Moore. So check them out as they're starting up their business, and their line is going to be at greengemlove.com.
And I'll promote the next Verbal Shenanigans comedy show at Tap House 15. If you guys came out to the last one, you were unbelievable audience. You were exactly what this guy needed. I explained some of my horror gigs leading up to that, and you guys were fantastic. So please come out. It is $45, and that is an amazing prefix menu from Tap House. That is appetizer, meal, and dessert, and the show. So you're going to spend that much anyway, so come on out with a rocking lineup of myself, Bobby Gaines, Karen Krantz, Jeff Paul, and headliner Richie Byrne, who used to warm up the Dr. Oz show. He did Gotham Comedy Live. He's been in the business for a really long time, so it's going to be another fun night. I can guarantee that. Other than that, I'd like to thank Porter for coming back on. Love when we have returning guests. I don't know if I get a you claimed I get a Kirby glow. I don't know if I have a Porter glow yet, but
no. I mean, you enjoy Porter a lot, but it's like when the leaves change on the trees and stuff like that, you just start brightening up, just saying, "Ooh, I can start looking at my calendar for getting Kirby on. Ooh, gotta get that Kirby love.
Show me that Kirby love. Oh, yeah. Kirby Chambliss is a pilot that we've had on like four times. But go check out Atreyu's new album called Baptizes on all your at basically anywhere you can listen to music. And it's a pretty kick-ass album. Other than that, guys, that's it. Please follow us on social media. Please download our episodes and leave a review. We got a couple of reviews lately that I was digging, so thank you for that. Leave a review on iTunes or whatever your podcast listening platform is. Thank you, Fantwans. We're still getting interactions from you guys, so we will thank you and love you for as long as that keeps going. No, we'll love you forever. Other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it, keep the win. Back.
Rest in peace, that piece of chicken.